This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Go there for the podcasts, the archives, the live stream. Go there for the articles and go there for the donate button. Also, go to nationalbugle.com. Recently rearranged new categories of news stories, including podcasts, because the YouTube channel has been taken away. I want to make it easier to locate these podcasts, these programs, and also we're going to have some funny memes up and more financial stuff. So it's good. It's all good. And also, of course, the co-certified link. You can get that from through nationalbugle.com, and we'll all lead an NKC, non-kosher certified lifestyle. So, Jeremy, how's your non-kosher certified lifestyle going?
It's going great, Patrick. Just a regular old working class white American trying to make his way in the world.
Not always easy. It's not always easy. Working class, too. We'll talk a little bit about the working class today. Because the working class, what weren't we supposed to be like the proletariats? Weren't we going to be the revolutionary force? How's that gone?
Well, I think that was the original plan when Jewish communists infiltrated our country in the 50s and 60s.
Has it ever worked anywhere?
They could claim victory in Russia where they did, the Bolsheviks did, but unite the working class together and overthrow the czars.
Yeah, I mean, even there, if you look at Leninism, like Marxism was, Marx predicted the revolution to start in England, right? And then, you know, maybe Germany, Belgium, places like that that were industrialized. And of course, Russia wasn't. And one of Lenin's theoretical contributions was, well, you have a vanguard party that's representing the working class that's not itself all that revolutionary or all that big, because the working class wasn't big. It was still mostly a peasant society. Of course, China was a peasant revolution, wasn't a working class revolution. So where did it actually ever happen? I don't know. And why not? These are all good theoretical questions. But why are we interested in the working class today? Today's show, not in today's era.
Well, in 1950s and 1960s America, you know, the working class would be still predominantly right-wing, and I would even argue that today we still are. And I think that the system, let's call it the system, that we know is controlled by Jews and upper echelons, the system understood that if it invoked a working-class movement in the 60s as a means of revolution, that would look very right-wing, and that's not what they wanted. So I think that they decided to shift strategy to another group.
Okay, you know, it's interesting when you mentioned this to me. So we think back the 60s being a radical time, but where was the radicalism? It was on campus, and it really wasn't in the streets. It wasn't in the working class. And I think a good reflection of this, you've heard of Mad Magazine, right? It was,
oh yeah.
It's this magazine. It's every month it's got Pete Buttigieg on the cover, right?
Butt gig.
It's got Pete Butt gig. Mayor Pete's on the cover. He does look a lot like Alfred E. Newman. And from time to time, they would come up with lyrics to parody songs, lyrics to songs that are well known. And so when you were talking about this just before we started the show, I thought back on a song, a parody song from about I don't know, 69 or 70 or something like that. And it's sung to, you were in the Air Force, right?
That's correct.
All right, so it is sung to the Air Force theme song, Wild Blue Yonder. And it goes, off we go into the peace group yonder, looking for some hippies to chase. There's a creep tearing our flag asunder. Atom boys, stomp on his face. Raise the flag over the land of freedom. We'll preserve liberty's ways. Those stinking reds will break their heads. Nothing can stop the hard hats today. So it's the hard hats. The hard hats. Who are the hard hats? They're the working class, the construction workers. They're the working class. And they were attacking the hippies who were, you know, college age. They weren't necessarily college students, but they were the college age radicals. And I think this is a perfect reflection of what you're talking about. And it's a reflection from real time, from 50 years ago, from Mad Magazine, which had to be Jewish. I'm sure it was Jewish.
That'd be interesting to look up. I did frequent the Mad Magazine reads when I was a kid in the 80s, and they were kind of funny, even though I didn't get most of the political stuff at the time. But yeah, the point is well taken, is that the working class then, much like it is now, you know, kind of rough and tumble guys that get out and work 8, 10, 12 hours a day, and they're more about, you know, guns, Bible, and flag, and country. And the Jews definitely did not want to incite this group in the 60s and empower them, so I think that they shifted to the college students for their revolution in the 60s. And I would refer to you in this matter, as this was pre-Patrick Donna Summers concert age, where you probably paid a little more attention to these things, right?
Yeah, I was a kid memorizing and singing those various songs. They had some good ones. They had songs for all of the various presidential candidates. Humphrey, whenever you're near him, you're certain to hear him. You really don't have a choice. There's some good stuff. George Wallace, he was going to keep the White House white. I can't remember. Good stuff. Mad Magazine, founded by editor Harvey Kurtzman. Oh, God. And publisher.
Oh, my God.
Now, Kurtzman, I'm not even going to bother looking up his background. William Maxwell Gaines. The picture of him, he looks like Jerry Garcia. I don't know, is he Jewish or not? Yes, he was Jewish. Gaines was born in Brooklyn, New York, to a Jewish household. So, yeah. It's
Jerry
no surprise.
Garcia, yeah. Jerry Garcia, that would probably another CIA op there, right?
I don't know. That's something I could just never get into. I just never got the Grateful Dead. People I jam with sometimes would want to play Grateful Dead songs, which would sometimes be only two chords and go on for 10 minutes. I never got that, but whatever. I never had Donna Summer in my repertoire. It was just that, I don't know, what the heck. I had her in my record collection either. But I did.
She was quite tame compared to some of the 60s psychedelic music that was going on. And we don't even have to go down the rabbit hole of where they, you know, sponsored by the CIA or whatever. They were funneled money from the record companies to subvert the culture and to fuel the sexual revolution of the 60s of the youth culture. I think we can definitely agree on that without going conspiratorial.
I don't have a lot of firsthand knowledge of it, but but I just remember my father's reactions to some of my records, that sounds pretty reasonable. Here's one other example, and it's not from America, but in the late 1980s, when there were demonstrations against the military government of South Korea, because you had generals running South Korea for the 60s, 70s, the 80s, with just a couple of very brief interludes. And they had actually done a pretty good job in a lot of ways, but By the 1980s, the country was pretty well built up. It was getting kind of affluent. And there were demonstrations against the government from two sources. One were the workers, and the other was the students. But you know something? The workers did not like the students coming in to their demonstrations, because the workers were demonstrating for higher wages and shorter hours. They were working like, you know, 10 hours a day, 6 days a week or something. They had these really long, so they had very concrete demands. Now, I don't know if the students were exactly going communist, because that type of thing wouldn't be tolerated, given that you had North Korea and all of this. So there's a lot that really wasn't tolerated. But the students were definitely more radical and left-wing, and the workers didn't want the students demonstrating with them, for the most part. They didn't cooperate together very much. So there may be a lot to that, and maybe somebody could look into, you know, other eras or other areas. You know, there was a lot of demonstrations in France in the late 60s, and did the workers and students mix it up? Did they mix? I don't know. But, okay, so where are we going from this?
Well, again, the system, the Jewish-controlled system in the 60s in America, that they were constantly trying to avoid what happened in 1930s Germany, where the working class all came together and rose up. And this could have been very possible in America, with it being over 90% homogeneous, you know, white European Americans. And so,
not over, but close to 90%. Yeah,
close to 90. And they wanted to avoid that. So the way they avoid that is not to empower the workers, but rather subvert the culture. So the shift went into cultural Marxism, rather than the traditional Marxist theory that had been exercised in the past with peasants, as you mentioned earlier in this broadcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I just wanted to point out that this shift we're still seeing today, that they'll shift from one group to another depending on, you know, their opportunists, depending on where they can get the most power from. And I did pull up a pretty interesting article by the UCLA Jewish publication Chaim, and
that's UCLA, University of California at Los Angeles. So it's a Jewish student publication.
Correct. Yeah, and there was an article in 2015, and it was entitled "Hiding Behind Progression: Jewish Passivity in the 1960s and Beyond in America."
And, yeah. You sent that to me. Were the Jews that passive in the 1960s?
Well, the writer of this article is claiming that they were, because they wanted to identify with whites,
mm-hmm,
so that they could avoid another Holocaust, right? They don't want the Goyim knowing. But the article is very interesting. The claim is that the Jews kind of just sat back and watched the Cultural Revolution and the Civil Rights Act go on, so that they didn't call a lot of attention to themselves. And I'm sure that the average, everyday, ordinary Shlomo did that. But the Jews in the higher echelons of media and politics most certainly did not just sit by passively.
No, and you know, when you think of radical leaders, you know, the 1968 convention, like what was it, the Chicago Nine or whatever they were, you think of these people with their big names. I don't know. I probably get all my names mixed up. Huh?
Saul Alinsky was big. He was certainly not passive, and
yeah,
one of our very own listeners, William from Montana, met Saul Alinsky.
Received some Saul Alinsky training for a week or something, right?
Yeah, very, very fascinating story that William shared with us one day on this broadcast. But no, Saul Alinsky most certainly wasn't passive. and you did have this movement to subvert the youth and counterculture in the 60s, because that what they were going against was the white patriarchal Christian majority, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, this article is very interesting. It starts out, this Jew writes, "The devastation suffered by Jews in the Holocaust is unforgivable, unparalleled, and unforgettable. So much so that their struggles startled the world in a way never seen before. Americans particularly were shaking after this horrifying genocide took place." So again, they're using the Holocaust as a means of explaining, you know, why they do what they do.
Unparalleled, and the Holocaust being unparalleled. What were the adjectives used? It's just unparalleled, this
right.
momentous event.
Unforgivable and unforgettable after this horrifying genocide took place. So, yeah, definitely they're using the Holocaust as...
You know, to an extent... It depends what year you're talking about, but in the 1960s, to a large extent, the Holocaust hadn't happened yet. You know, a lot of it. If you go back to encyclopedias from the late 40s, there's no entry for the Holocaust. It doesn't mean that none of these events actually happened, but they weren't being called the Holocaust. But what I'm really referring to is by the 60s or even by 1950, most of these stories were out, but they just weren't being promoted. They didn't have the same elevation in public mind.
It was getting that way. Help me out, Patrick, because I don't have a good prep on this particular thing I'm going to mention, but there was an infamous trial in Israel that was televised of some Nazi officers that confessed. Are you familiar with this?
Well, Nazi officers? No, but, you know, there was the... who was the guy? Jeepers, creepers. Hold on one second. Because there was the guy who went to, who was tried in Israel. He was not a propagandist. Who was it? He was a functionary. Adolf Eichmann, right?
Adolf Eichmann, that's correct, sir. Yeah, trial that was televised, right, in the early 1960s. June 1962. Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, I don't know how much of any of that would have been televised in America, but apparently televised in Israel.
Yes, and that's when you start really getting the push for the Holocaust into the public mind.
Because when I was a kid, you know, my father had been in the army in World War II, and he wasn't really big on it, but. I remember asking once, who's the worst person in history? Hitler. Why? Because he tried to take over the world. Had nothing to do with the Jews. And you know, you would have a program like Hogan's Heroes, which was a very typical 1960s sitcom. And it was based in World War II, placed in World War II. But the two Nazi characters, Colonel Klink and Sergeant Schultz, they were just kind of bumbling idiots. But they weren't evil. They're kind of fun characters. And, you know, there was the German girl, the secretary for Colonel Klink, that the American guy was always talking up and chatting up. And Germans really weren't portrayed as evil. They were just portrayed as bumbling. And
yeah, I think...
There was no Holocaust subtext to it.
I think this was just being pushed into the American psyche during and after the 60s. But this this Jewish writer in the article on Chaim, he writes, speaking of the 1960s,
why don't we get to that after we come back from the break?
Got it.
All right, we'll be right back. Well, we are up on our first break, so we will come back after the break, and we've got more exciting things to go.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We're back, and so you were just about to read something from Haim, the Jewish student publication from UCLA.
Yes, yes. It was speaking of the 1960s, this writer writes, this golden age of liberalism that promoted social justice and equality would thus seemingly be the conclusion to overt discrimination against the Jews. Yet, American prejudice against the Jews tragically still remains a part of our society, regardless of how much progression has been made after the Holocaust. So, basically he's saying that the 60s should have been an era of progression for the Jews, but yet they were still in hiding. That's the whole thesis.
In hiding or in crypto. So, I mean, in a lot of ways they were hiding in plain sight. I mean, they were very active. It's just that they were not openly self-identifying as Jews, but they were hardly in hiding. You know, it's just...
This article cites as an example of why they should be in hiding. In Atlanta in 1915, the lynching of Leo Frank. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I am familiar with that, but not everybody in the audience is necessarily familiar with it.
So he was an American factory superintendent who was convicted in 1913 of the murder of a 13-year-old employee. Her name was Mary Fagan. So in his trial, he had a commutation, right? So he basically got off. And the
now was it the governor who commuted the sentence?
I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And people got together and took this guy out and lynched him. So I mean, apparently, you know, we're looking at this retrospectively, and it's hard to go and do forensics on this stuff. But I mean, this guy had enough evidence against him that the American people drug him out and hung him as a form of justice, as they.
And this was in in Alabama? It was somewhere in the South.
Let's see, Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, so it was in Georgia. All right, in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, so this carrying out of justice was portrayed as an act of anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so this is one of reasons that the author of the article cites that the Jews had to be in hiding.
Well, and wasn't it the single event that prompted the formation of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith? I mean, B'nai B'rith, I guess, existed already as some sort of Jewish organization, but the Anti-Defamation League, wasn't that a response specifically to this incident?
That is what I'm reading in history, yes.
Mm.
So, I mean, yeah, it's... like I said, the author of this article is citing this and saying that even though all this progression was going on in the 60s, the Jews still felt like they were threatened. But in the upper echelons, they were most certainly pushing the Cultural Revolution in the 60s. And as we mentioned earlier, they shifted from the working class to the youth, to the youth in college, as a means of a proletarian.
Probably a group that they would, well, I mean, in universities, especially in a lot of fields, social science fields, you've got all these Jewish professors. College kids are supposed to be open-minded, and you know, it's that age. You've still got some teenage rebellion from your parents, so it might be a particularly fertile. Particularly fertile soil for Jewish ideas, more than the working class, which is going to be older, already more or less set in its ideas, and how are you going to reach them? You're not reaching them through university courses where you can go really deeply into things. You might be reaching them through pop culture, through TV shows, but, you know, they can select what they're going to watch and what they're not going to watch. I wonder how subversive Hee Haw was. I mean, Hee Haw was designed for rural America.
Oh, bro, don't be hating on Hee Haw. I grew up watching Hee Haw. That was some good stuff.
I grew up not watching it, but being aware of it, because it wasn't aimed at the suburbs.
The Dukes of Hazzard and Hee Haw go hand in hand. They were totally fash.
Well, there were these 60s shows, I think three 60s shows in particular from CBS, Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Petticoat Junction. And they were all, Beverly Hillbillies was about country people in the city. You transplanted them and you gave them a lot of money, but they were still stupid and still hunting possum back in the around the cement pond, but they tended to make rural people, Green Acres for sure, making rural people look stupid. You had this one guy, I forgot his name, but he lived with his pig Arnold, although you know, some people, there are suburban people who live with a pig in their house, and Arnold seemed like a pretty smart and cute pig. Petticoat Junction, I don't quite remember as well, but I know I used to watch it. But yeah, it was all rural, and for decades, really, the one group of people that you could make fun of, call stupid, and there would be no retribution, was rural Americans, the redneck.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Mm-hmm. Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
And we're back. So you watched T-Haw growing up.
Well, I did. And, you know, all of us, all of our family and all of our rural working class peoples, we ended up identifying with programs like T-Haw and the Beverly Hillbillies. But I can definitely see in retrospect, looking back, that the anti-white narrative was being set up because, as you mentioned, these groups were being made fun of. They were being made light of, just like in the sitcom All in the Family, mm-hmm. You know, Archie Bunker. Mm-hmm. Archie Bunker, who totally fash, totally spoke our language, you know, he was seen as the out-of-touch old white guy.
Although he was popular. In 1972, yeah. There was the Archie Bunker for President movement.
Very good, yeah. It's funny because I think the system wanted to set this character and characters like him up as being out of touch and the enemy, but he ended up grabbing the hearts of the American public. So that's funny how that worked. But you can see subversion in Hollywood going all the way back, even to like Mary Tyler Moore. She's a woman. She's single. She didn't have any kids. She had a career. She didn't need a man. This is all setting us up for the 60s revolution.
Yeah, Mary Tyler Moore. She had been on the Dick Van Dyke Show. And the Dick Van Dyke Show, I guess you'd have to dissect it pretty deeply to find pause in it. Their next-door neighbors were Jewish. How obvious that was, I don't know. But yeah, Jerry Halper, the dentist, And of course, I didn't know that the actress Rose Marie was Jewish, because I always pegged her as being Italian. But I guess the actress Rose Marie, who was Lucy, what was her name on the show? I can't remember off the top of my head. She was his co-worker. And then, of course, Maury Amsterdam playing Buddy, the other co-worker, was very obviously Jewish, with all these Jewish stereotypes. Always. Oh, by the way, why did God invent Goyim?
I don't know.
Because somebody's got to pay retail. And Buddy was always trying to get, you know, he always had a cousin who could get you something wholesale, you know. So there's all these very Jewish tropes. Although he's a very funny character. It was a funny show, but looking back on it, I guess it was pretty Jewish. And Jew-friendly in a lot of ways. But it didn't go into a whole bunch of racial or social stuff. There was one show, and I'm trying to remember what the point of it really was, where, for whatever reason, Rob Petrie, Dick Van Dyke, they had had a baby, and they brought home their baby, and then all of a sudden he started thinking it was the wrong baby, that they had brought home the wrong baby. And, of course, Mary Tyler Moore, she didn't want to have her baby taken away from her. But he was sure that they had taken home the wrong baby because there was another, Robert Petrie at the hospital at the same time. And so he arranged for the other Robert Petrie to come over to the house with their baby. And so they come over, and guess what? The other Rob Petrie was black. And so, but at the time race was real. So, I mean, at the time they had this strange idea that only white parents could have white babies and black parents could have black babies, where of course we know now that, you know, it's race is just a social construct. But
oh, yeah,
yeah,
of course.
But the Mary Tyler Moore show, which was in the 70s, and I got to say, Mary Tyler Moore was really, really pretty. I had a thing for her, especially on the Dick Van Dyke show. On the Mary Tyler Moore show, yeah, that was Lou Grant, you know, was a Jewish, her boss was a Jewish actor, Ed Asner. He wasn't always portrayed as being Jewish, so it was a little bit ambiguous, but then she had the best friend Rhoda, who was very, very pretty, but portrayed by Valerie Harper, a non-Jewish actress, but very Jewish stereotype. And I don't know. Always looking for a husband, and hopefully one that was Jewish. Is he Jewish? So, I don't know why we're going down this road. We were going to talk about Andy Ngo, Andy Ngo.
Yeah, the reason we brought up old Andy there, what, Vietnamese photojournalist, also homosexual. So
who knew?
He checks all the blocks.
Who knew?
Yeah. Checks all the blocks there, and we, you know, in our discussion about the system, the Jewish system, shifting their support. I think what we're about to witness, and what we are witnessing, is the shift in the support of Antifa and BLM. And I think the system is going to shift from supporting them to taking them down, because this Asian photojournalist, so he's a journalist, there's one big check, and he's Asian, there's another big check as a minority, and he's homosexual. He was beat up by Antifa for simply covering Antifa's protests of a right-wing rally in Portland. Is that correct?
And that's his thing, right? He covers Antifa in Portland. That's kind of his self-proclaimed beat.
Even though there were many white men that were beat up and sustained much worse injuries, this
were
person
there?
Is hollow.
I didn't even
oh,
know
yeah.
that.
That's because you can't find any information on them. I've searched Google for an hour trying to prep for this show, and I couldn't find the names or what happened to them, but there are many other people beat up. And you don't hear anything about them, but they're really pushing this Andy Ngo. Both CNN and Fox, both of which I've sent you articles on, are pushing the beatdown of this Asian homo photojournalist. So, yeah. And the Fox article, Portland mayor should be investigated by feds over Antifa attack on conservative rider, says Senator Ted Cruz. Oh, this guy was a conservative too. Wow, there's four check marks, right? The article starts off, Portland mayor Ted Wheeler should be investigated by federal law enforcement officials following his handling of the protests in his city this weekend that saw a conservative rider reportedly attacked by members of Antifa. So get this, Patrick. White working class Americans who were beat down and had eggs thrown at them at Trump rallies in 2016, that doesn't spark anything. Oh, well, that's just part of it. But now this Asian conservative photojournalist homosexual gets beat up, and now we need FBI investigation. What do you make of that?
Yeah. I mean, Trump's own inauguration, and you had a limousine. I don't know whose limousine it was, but a limousine got gutted with fire. You had
the business world this morning. Is mourning the loss of
Black
an auto
Lives
industry
Matter,
legend,
taking over
Leon
intersections
Coca,
in just you know, blocks from the inauguration site. Lauren Southern was there, and she was getting kind of pushed around a bit, or I don't know. I guess a bit. It wasn't anything big, but there is video of it. There's video of all sorts of violence that was going on, and nothing came of it. Nobody, anybody who was charged, any Antifa who was charged with anything, the charges were all dropped. But, you know, if you think back to 2016, and 2016 was in the election, the Democrats were paying a lot of homage to Black Lives Matter. Right, and Black Lives Matter could come to a Bernie rally and take over the mic, and Bernie would just let them do it. And they're not very much in evidence now. So Black Lives Matter, I don't know if they've turned on Black Lives Matter, but Black Lives Matter is being marginalized. It seems
they're in the doghouse because BLM supported Ilhan Omar and her anti-Semitic remarks about the Israeli, AIPAC in our government, and when she called them out, BLM, backed her up. So yeah, Black Lives Matter is in the doghouse right now. I think you're seeing the system turn on BLM and Antifa, whom they most fervently supported in the past. And check this out. Richard Grenell, this is in the Fox News article, the same one that
now,
I was
this
reading
is
from.
U.S. ambassador to Germany?
Yeah, the gay U.S. ambassador
gay,
to Germany.
Yes, the gay ambassador to Germany.
And a Fox News contributor, he tweeted that he has asked the Justice Department to investigate the incident in Portland. He says, I can't just sit by and watch my friend be brutally attacked. So, wow, they're all coming out of the woodwork now and to support this Andy NGO who was attacked by Antifa. When total crickets and silence when they attack regular white working class Trump supporters in the past who were brutally attacked by Antifa. So this is why I'm seeing a shift in the system and who it supports. Also, there's a CNN article that I sent you.
Mm-hmm. I don't think. What was the CNN article on?
CNN article reads, we need to pay attention to the attack on Andy NGO. So both CNN and Fox News are getting behind this Asian conservative gay photojournalist to go against Antifa. This is very fascinating. CNN, nothing quite exemplifies tolerance like the video of masked young people hurling objects and screeching profanities at a young conservative journalist. CNN backing up a conservative journalist. Isn't that interesting?
Huh.
It goes on to read, the viral images are sickening. Andy NGO, a photojournalist and editor at the online magazine Colette, who has made a cottage industry of exposing instances of manufactured hate crimes, was viciously assaulted. So where was this guy at, by the way? This is me. Where was this guy at if he's exposing instances of manufactured hate crimes? Where was he at, Jesse Smollett?
I don't know.
Totally silent. He was viciously attacked while covering an Antifa rally held as a counter-protest to a rally of right-wing groups, including the Proud Boys in Portland, Oregon. So you've got CNN, Ted Cruz, all of the left, all coming out and saying that the Portland, Oregon mayor should be impeached for allowing this to happen.
Indicted, right?
Indicted.
Yeah.
I saw the word impeached. That's probably...
Well, impeached and indicted are, I mean, they're very similar. And maybe it's the correct word. But so then, you know, the question becomes, Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, as my understanding of its origin was, it was a hashtag that, you know, these three black lesbian women started a hashtag on Twitter or whatever. And then you got George Soros and other Jewish money got behind the hashtag and turned it into an organization. And, you know, you could, 4 years ago, you could go to, maybe 3 years ago, 2016, I remember going to Black Lives Matter website. And I think I did an article for this on davidduke.com. And, you know, the article was not a very black article or the website. I mean, the website was talking about, you know, we've got to stand up for, they were using the folks, they were for gay folks and trans folks and queer folks and undocumented folks and, you know, black folks of all kind, because black folks are undocumented and we're queer and we're trans and this and that. It's like, you know, most black people can't really relate to that. Most of them don't relate to that. So it was obviously astroturfed. And, you know, so the question becomes, and it's not really an either or, because it can be both, but these organizations that, if not created, that are promoted, exploited, led by Jewish money and Jewish power, then they, at some point, I mean, is it that the goyim who make up their members start going off on their own in a direction that was not foreseen? Or that they just, they're doing what they're supposed to do, but they just outlive their usefulness and then, you know, need to be disposed of.
So, well, yeah, I mean, BLM and Antifa, they're useful idiots. They are eggs that need to be broken to make the omelet, as Vladimir Lenin probably would attest to. And now that they've outlived their usefulness, the system is turning on them. Listen to this language in the same CNN article, quoting it, simply bearing a name that says you're opposed to evil, like anti-fascist, should not inure us to your unprovoked violence and unconstitutional attempts to block others' free speech rights. Wow. Everyone, right and left, must condemn and literally unmask this behavior, not glorify it for political ends. CNN's Jake Tapper tweeted, Antifa regularly attacks journalists. It's reprehensible. So this is just more evidence that the system is turning on their useful idiots, Antifa, because Antifa is done. They've outlived their usefulness, and I think I know why. We've got the 2020 election coming up. Trump has, regardless of what his initial intentions were, he has succumbed to the system, and now he is a regular neocon. He's acting as such.
For the most part.
And so, for the most part. He's done a few, you've mentioned a few decent things that he's done, but for the most part, he's succumbed to the system. For whatever reason.
Yeah, because he's been... I mean, in my estimation, it's because he's been defeated by the system.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, they're going after Don Jr. They have all of these indictments from the Mueller probe that have been sent down to the Southern District of New York, so that when Trump gets out, he and his children are going to be prosecuted by the state, which cannot be pardoned at the federal level. And they have a bit of leverage on him. And it was just at the beginning of this year, of 2019, that he really began cucking bad. So I think that he's running this campaign in 2020, and now when Antifa and Black Lives Matter comes to disrupt his campaigns, they're going to be turned on viciously by the system. That's my prediction. That's what I see going on here.
Well, it's something that we'll be able to see whether it happens or not, and I wouldn't be surprised that they're Black Lives Matter. You don't even hear much about them anymore. Antifa, who really likes them? They're not very appealing. Fascist. Nobody even knows what fascism means. Fascism was never very well defined to Americans, other than just as an epithet. Okay, we are coming up on our last break. We will be right back. Oh, we're going into the next break. So we'll get with the thing after the next break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news?
And we are back. So Antifa, they shouldn't be immune to criticism because they're against something evil, the evil being fascist. And, you know, the comment I was making going into the break was that fascism was never defined to Americans, maybe to Italians, maybe to Germans. Maybe it was defined, but not really to Americans. Communism, well, so many communists were self-proclaimed Marxists, and you had the Communist Manifesto, so, and you had a massive body of Marxist literature, and so there was something concrete you could point to. Fascism in America has primarily been used as an insult, and the last point I'll make is Tucker Carlson who will, you know, he's anti-Chinese, and I don't like the, I mean, if we've got a foreign problem, it's with Israel, it's not with China, or it's more with Israel, much more with Israel than China, but he'll refer to the fascist government of China. And of course, what's the ruling party of China called? The Communist Party. Are they fascist? Maybe they are. They've been very, very successful. So what does it even mean? I'm kicking it over to you.
Well, the classical definition of fascism would be a bundle of sticks. Individually, they can be broken, but when binded together, they're unbreakable and can be used as a weapon, actually. And this would definitely be America, you know, as at its founding, as different European ethnicities, German, French, Irish, English, bound together under one government. And we actually have the symbol of the fascists on our Supreme Court, and as you mentioned in the prep, in our Senate. So this is interesting, though, that the anti-fascist really means anti-American. At the end of there's a Fox News article that says a registered Democrat and Bernie Sanders supporter protesting a right-wing rally in Oregon earlier this month says he was viciously beaten by militant members of his own movement because he possessed a fascist symbol, which was an American flag. So even these people that claim to be Americans and they're opposing right-wingers, they're considered fascist if they have an American flag. This is really either American or anti-American, because fascism is, you know, many peoples together, drawn together into one government. Now, this doesn't work.
So is it, I mean, the question is it many peoples together, meaning many groups together, or many individuals together becoming a group? And in the American...
You can say that, but you can't become a group if you don't have anything in common. And,
right.
And Europeans had something in common. The Irish, the German, the English.
Well,
they all had many things in common.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there's for one.
A lot Christianity in common.
Absolutely.
Once they learned English. Now, I mean, when I think back, if we're thinking back to, say, the first founding of the United States in 1776, it was pretty British, and I think they wanted their rights as Englishmen. Of course, individual colonies, the Delaware or the Delaware River Valley, that was first settled by Swedes, I believe, and of course the Hudson River Valley by Dutch, but it later all came under the British. I don't know, but we only have a minute or so left, so I'll leave you with the last words.
Well, yeah, that's classic fascism, and even in the Roman Empire, which is the most classic historical example of fascism, you know, they were Europeans bound together. The darker-skinned individuals ended up being slaves and participating in gladiator events. You have to have things in common to bind together. Common religion, common creed, and common race.
And how about our values?
Exactly.
The values that define us as a people.
We're on a slippery slope because the sieve nets can say, well, these blacks can share our values, but at the end of the day, they really don't. Not as a group. You might have individual blacks. America is a fascist nation, and Antifa is anti-American.
Well, we're out of time, so we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining the show. I look forward to you coming back again next week. And
thank you, Patrick.
I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National People Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to